Para-X Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Good evening, everyone, and thanks again for joining me for another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Tonight, I am going to introduce to you a topic that I do not hear about, probably very rarely to not at all, but was brought up at this paranormal conference that I attended a few years back in Las Vegas from a gentleman who was in the audience, and I believe at the time The speaker had, I think, was trying to gather up or ask about unusual experiences or had been on a topic that kind of tripped the trigger of this gentleman. And he had basically had said that his friend, yes, not someone he knew, but more or less his friend, had recently died of, back then, of self-combustion. And I sat and I thought about, you know, everything that had happened to me up until that point. And I have had over, and I'm not kidding you, over 100 different kinds of experiences with the paranormal. And I can't say they're all really, all devastating, but I can tell you that when the paranormal presented itself to me, these situations present, that's probably the best way that I want to say this, in a way that gives me another layer of a paranormal experience. The one that I hope to never experience or hope to never know somebody who does experience this is self-combustion. And when someone self-combusts, then the question is do they hang around after they die as a spirit, a ghost? Does it become a residual moment? Does the place where they combusted all of a sudden become really hot? So I did a little research because I was really interested in wanting to talk about this topic eventually, and now is the time of eventually. So I'm going to, I did find an article. It was dated back in 2011, so that was 10 years ago. So this has been a hot, no pun intended, topic since that time. And this article reports 10 cases, but since that time, of course, you might as well add another one on, because that one, obviously, this situation with this gentleman's friend obviously happened well after that. For the most part, I think you'll find this to be a very interesting segment tonight. Lately, a lot of podcasters want to talk about UFOs and abductions and aliens. And I find that very interesting how right now is the hot time for that, because no one has anything better to talk about. But I have to say, I myself, I'm just as interested in it now than I ever was, since I had a couple situations occur to me directly. And they seemed incredibly unlikely that it was anything of the ghostly, spiritual, spirit type of experience, but rather more of something that was, like I said, another layer to my paranormal experiences. Something I could not explain, and something that definitely happened, and something that I'm glad that if I saw something visually, that didn't give me an immediate heart attack. So anyway, we'll get into more of that later on. If we have time tonight, also, in addition to the self-combustion, human combustion discussion, I would also like to engage in a few revisitations of a few topics. And I would also like to first start out, though, with the revisiting of the story that I was telling you last time on my show regarding teleportation and this experience, or the experiences that were happening at this bed and breakfast in Minnesota. The place that, by the way, I still cannot disclose. But what I think I didn't also mention on that last show, I might have, but if I didn't, I'll mention it now. This bed and breakfast place, also, the owners, both of them, visually, had seen more than twice out in their backyard, not their backyard. Their backyard is across just a simple road. And then I believe, if I recall this correctly, it was by a lake or a stream or a river or something of that sort. It was dark out that evening, so I couldn't tell you what was there. I just know that water was on the other side of these buildings that were where they were built. Anyway, these owners have also visually seen with their own eyes actual UFO aircraft. So anyway, hopefully I'll have enough time to maybe chatter about that. I didn't have time to get into that discussion with one of the owners, but again, I hope to go back to this bed and breakfast and revisit some of these topics, because there was just a wealth of information that exploded at me just before we were leaving. And I wish, and of course, when you have your husband with you who is like, oh gosh, another UFO situation here, or not even UFO, paranormal / UFO, it's like another layer. You have to get going. So anyway, let's start out with the haunted report tonight before we get into our main topic of self-combustion, and then also maybe some extra flavorings here of some other topics to debate and talk about, and then proceed on as usual. All right, then, stay tuned. I'll be right back.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Did I hear somebody come in?
Welcome to the Haunted Report. Well, let's go back to October. No, let's go back to September. September of 2020. As my husband and I were making our way back from a long vacation, and we decide to stop at this bed and breakfast in an undisclosed area in Minnesota and stay the night. So how's that for a start? So as I mentioned in my last show, when I reserved our room for that evening, it was basically my anniversary gift to my husband. And I like to stay at a number of bed and breakfasts, but most importantly, I like to stay at the ones that have that aged 1800s/ atmosphere, look, you know, timeless in the sense of what it may look like back then, but a little modernization, of course, since that time. And I'm fascinated with places like that. I think many of us are. There's just something very, I don't want to say use the word romantic. That's not the right word. Rustic, maybe. Different. Unique. If you take a look at how we decorate our houses today, and then some of these homes that were built back in the 1800s, which, of course, had to be modernized because obviously for obvious reasons, but trying to retain some of their character, I don't know, there's just something about it that just feels comfortable, or at least it does to me. Anyway, the conversation with this owner began at breakfast, and yeah, again, my husband just hates it, and some of you out there can absolutely relate to this. You want to ask the question so badly. You know it's been answered a million times, asked a million times, answered a million times. Some owners are reluctant. Some owners are grateful that you brought it up. Some owners are curious if you've had an experience. Some owners are just like, So a lot of times, of course, they're not going to bring this up. Some people will openly because that might be a way to bring in a certain crowd spend the night. Other individuals, when they go to bed and breakfasts, their main intent, of course, is to have that I'm not even going to use the word nostalgia because a lot of us didn't grow up in homes that look of the period of the Victorian age or the age back in the day in the 1800s when it was the obvious, the rich from the poor, you know, or the middle class. I'm not even sure they had a middle class back then. It seemed like it was one or the other. I can tell you for fact, though, that my family didn't know it at the time. I think as we became older, we started to recognize a few things. But my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfathers who actually came over, immigrated from Norway, were master carpenters and built just absolutely gorgeous structures, including some that are still existing to this day. I didn't realize that until I did a lot of genealogy and research back in the day. But the house where I captured the photograph, of course, of what I believe to be my great aunt / and great grandfather staring at me from the window. Very clear image, mind you. Have it in all my books because that's my premiere of all times. Built what I called back then some type of a Victorian colonial type house, which was the premier house of the county where they lived. So I felt like, you know, and of course the house was recently burned down because it was about 119, 120 years old. And my immediate grandparents who lived there, who, you know, generations of taking over that house, well, unfortunately it wasn't kept up and it had to come down. But the comments that were made to me by the fire department who did training of burning down that house. They only do 2 a month, so they told me, because they welcomed the experience, had all commented what a well-built house that was and how unique it was and how, you know, it was of its time. Well, guess what? It was of its time. So when you go into other people's homes that are even more, are more on a grander scale, you can't help but take an interest in what you're looking at or sleeping in or what it could have been like or what happened there or did someone die there, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, sitting at breakfast, and of course I decided I'll just ask the question. You know, we were there for a quick stay, in and out, wasn't expecting the place to be haunted, wasn't advertised as being haunted. Didn't know anything about that, didn't ask the night before, yada, yada, yada. And so, because some people would be scared away from that and then they'd want a refund or didn't, you know, whatever. So asked, and of course, just all of a sudden, the floodgates of that home just opened up and I was learning so much about all the different types of things that go on at that house even to this day. All right, so let's start with, again, just briefly, the daughter of this owner, who was probably in the age of 4 or 5-ish back in the day, and she liked to play down in the basement a lot. And at one point, you know, said to her, the owner, the mother, that she wanted to go down in the basement to play with her friend. And, of course, the mother's like, oh, imaginary friend, all right, yeah, I'll humor her, you know, get her out of her hair probably for a little while. So she says, yeah, sure, go on down the basement and play. Well, I don't know how many, not, it wasn't long after that. I don't know how many years, but not many. What this owner also did was she hung in the living room pictures of the former owners of that home and a picture of the family. And the little girl at one point came upstairs and she from the basement or whatever, and she was going through that living room and I don't know what caught her eye on the picture, but she was looking at the picture and she started pointing to this little girl. And the little girl's age probably was, oh, I don't know what she said it was. I think I reported it to be like 7, 8, 9 or maybe something around 6, 7, 8 or something like in that area. And she said something like, "Mommy, Mommy, this is who I play with. This is my friend." And she started pointing to the image of this little girl in this picture of the former family that used to live there, or one of the first families or the second family that had lived there back in the day, okay? And, of course, that got her curiosity up. So then she tried to do some research on this gal to see if she was still, you know, how old would she be then and all that, and could she still be alive and all this stuff, da-da-da-da-da. She managed to hunt down the children, I think. I believe it was the children of this little girl slash obviously woman that she saw in the picture. The age, now that I have in my notes in here, I think I might have reported 95, but I think the age was more like 96. And they found her, let's see, somewhere in Boston in, I think, possibly, not sure, some kind of facility, but she was in a coma. And so what was really, really interesting about this and made me think a little bit more about this experience in and of itself was the word teleportation. And a lot of times, and I just briefly talked about it on my last show, but this woman in a coma literally teleported herself back into that house at the age of 5, 6, 7, 8, something like that, playing with this daughter just as plain as day, literally, like a little girl. I suppose the mother to this day wish she could have asked more questions back then, but this came about a couple years later when, like I said, the kid got interested and saw the picture hanging on the wall in the living room. And so, of course, by then, a lot of times their memories, they don't remember this stuff. You know, she might say, "Yeah, I think I had a friend. I know my husband played with an imaginary friend when he was age 3, didn't recall much more except that this person who he named Robert, which was either his deceased uncle or deceased brother, was playing with him, and that's all he could remember was when he introduced himself as Robert. So I think that was really interesting. So anyway, isn't it interesting how it is possible, I guess, to teleport yourself back in time to a place where you're the most happiest? So in the discussion with the children of this woman who was in this coma who eventually died, and this had happened during the point where she was in a coma, okay? So that's something interesting for people to think about. The children did say that their mother had her happiest experiences of all occurred in that house, and she was really, really sad and upset when the time came when they basically had to leave that home. And I think about the little girl and the gentleman, older man, that showed up in the window that I captured, photographed, plain as day. I mean, the number of people that I've showed this picture to, and their mouths just drop open. Some of them are thinking, "Oh, my, must be Photoshop." No. So sorry. Thank you for, you know, the suggestion. I have it on a negative. But the thing is about this is that how did they know I was going to be on that farm that day? How did they know I was going to just show up there? Because it's very unlikely that spiritual activity or ghosts or people of the... It's very unlikely that they're hanging out somewhere all the time. Something can trigger them to coming back there. Something can trigger them to just wanting to come back for a visit in general. But it's not like you can just go in and call them up all the time. Now, some people will say, well, this place is so haunted, they're here all the time. And that might be the case, okay? But in this case, the interesting part with my great aunt and was my great aunt is that she died a mile to a mile and a half in the first house they lived in when they immigrated to Minnesota from Norway, but he was of age to get his own or his first house. That's my great-grandfather. And so anyway, either they were traveling together and visiting the house, or how did they know that I was there? I was there by myself, by the way, wandering the property, taking pictures. This was just after my grandmother had passed away, and I wanted to document that homestead and that house. And I sure did, down to the point of back, you know, last year when it was burnt to the ground. I documented every second of it. It was just, you know, a place that I can't explain. The place did, by the way, remain haunted for a long period of time. You know, I always went ghost hunting with my sister. Hate the word hunting, but ghost searching on this property, and captured all kinds of things on that property. Can't explain exactly what I was capturing. Can't explain much, but I do know that the barn had some ones in there. I say some ones because definitely had the same conversation, by the way. This is going to be very interesting to you. When I was around the barn the first time, and I had my my ghost app on that picks up words, this spirit was telling me a little bit about themselves, military, can't remember some of the other things, but there were like three words or whatever that it was trying to tell me about being in the military, et cetera, et cetera. And then a year ago, just before the place was all burned down, including the barn, I had the same words right around that barn all over again, like someone was with me telling me the same story all over again. They're in the military, I can't remember offhand. I'd have to go relook at my notes. But the thing is, it's like, oh, how interesting. It's almost like a residual speaking of themselves, or it was an intelligent spirit that just hung around there. And it was possible it could have been a relative of mine, or it could have been someone from down the road. So anyway, that was when, just back to this bed and breakfast, it just kind of reminded me of that, because, you know, sometimes maybe these spirits can teleport themselves into some kind of a physical form at some point, and especially show up at the point in their life that they felt most happiest and healthiest. So the little girl that I'm talking about, my great aunt, she passed away around age 10, 11, something like that. But she showed herself in the window to be about, looked to me like 5, 6, I don't think 7, more like 5 or 6. The gentleman that was peering over her shoulder was, he passed, I think, close to age 80. And he showed himself in the window to be more like late 60s, early 70s, something like that. And he passed of pneumonia, by the way, when he was out digging something out of a ditch. And I don't even think he was on that. He wasn't on that property when he passed there. He lived next door in a smaller home, believed to be the first building they lived on the property, which was technically what they called the cabin. And I believe he was probably out there digging in a ditch in the wintertime, got pneumonia and died very quickly. So anyway, that's the story that kind of goes into this teleportation thing. Back into this house, the room that, isn't this interesting? The room that I chose and there for the evening was what was technically referred to as the matriarch's room. And someone that was like the head of those that tended to the housekeeping and the property and the, you know, food making and all that sort of thing. Kind of the the matriarch and who always kept order in the house. The room that this woman brought me to opened up the door, and of course my nervous system went off, unfortunately, was where it looked to me like it was the maid's room, but there was a guest, a male guest, who stayed in that room and woke up one night to have some troubled-looking woman floating above his head with distress all over her face. And she was in what appeared to be some type of a mist form, but he could see the face well enough to decipher that it was a woman and someone who was either not necessarily upset, but in some kind of distress. And I can't remember this exactly, but I don't think she liked men in that room. Something to do with that. And but he brought this guest brought it up to the owner at breakfast and asked if that house was haunted because of this experience. So that was interesting. What is this thing here? Occupied by, with Down syndrome. Well, it's possible that the person that might have been in there could have had Down syndrome, but I could have sworn that she said it was the maid, but someone who was very distressed. Incidents that have taken place in the house have been piano playing, or at least fingers. You know how you rub the finger all the way across the keys? That was when there were some guests sitting around in the house for a moment, and then all of a sudden that went off. So that was brought up. Items missing and reappearing. Oh, yes. This is something you have to ask yourself a question about, too. The house that was next door to this house had a fire and killed three of them. There was a 12-year-old, a 3-year-old, and then also the mother. And the question ultimately, I do believe she did say that she would often hear sounds of running up and down the hallway. And you know how 3-year-olds get. I mean, I'm not saying the 12-year-old didn't run up and down the hallway, but it was the mother, a 3-year-old, and a 12-year-old, and believed to possibly be the 3-year-old. And then do you know how little kids take their hands and they go up to a window and they start kind of pounding on it with their hands, and so their hands are open? Not only that, but small handprints on the window in the one room that was closest to, or when you looked out that window, was the one that they could ultimately see their former house. So that child is running up and down all the time. One thing about little kids, which I find very interesting, and I see this everywhere, although maybe it's partly my imagination, is that as an adult, I seem to make people feel uneasy, scare people. Don't know why. Maybe it's because I don't always just smile and glimmer like most do, but little kids aren't afraid of me. I have little kids and kids of all ages, probably, I don't know, maybe up to age 12, and maybe they want to up to age 14, but particularly up to then, I'm like the Pied Piper of kids. I went to my nephew's wedding. This is unfortunately where, you know, I'm sorry if my any family member is listening to this, but unfortunately this is where the COVID came in. But I had children there that weren't even, you know, I had paid no attention to, and I was just all of a sudden gathering my, you know, these children around me. I don't know. It's just an interesting thing how, and I'm also a dog whisperer for some reason too. So I have two unknown talents, something about being the Pied Piper of children and then also being able to calm down or talk to dogs. It's just odd. I don't know. I can't get in. I don't know. It's weird. Some other things in that house. Smells of Old Spice. Oh, for some of us, we know that smell. We grew up with that smell. Some people are still using that smell. But it's that smell from years ago. Back in the day, it's a very distinct smell. And it's a cologne, of course, or an aftershave that men would put on their faces, you know, and some people on their bodies. And so she would have smells of that once in a while. Let's see. Her dog. Their dog that they had. They had pictures on the walls. This dog particularly did not like looking at the great grandparents' picture. Would start to growl. Hated that picture. Do not know what would compel a dog to look at a picture like that, especially of these people from way back when, unless there was somebody standing next to that picture that they couldn't see, and the dog wasn't growling at the picture. The dog was growling at the apparition who was standing by the picture. I don't know. That's what goes on. Here's an interesting thing. She said there was once a box with a wedding dress. She opened up the box. She saw the wedding dress, and the dog started to growl again at this wedding dress. Once again, energy does attach itself to garments and items. So the owner threw the wedding dress out of the house. I don't know where she threw it. I don't know if it went into a bush or she threw it in the trash or what. But the daughter came home one day and she discovered this wedding dress laying in this box or in this box, whatever. She put it on and then she went into the house wearing it. And if that didn't, like, send some nerves up the spine. Let's see. That I find interesting. But the whole thing behind that, of course, is, of course, the fact that energy doesn't just always disappear. It can reside on articles of clothing. It can reside especially on dolls, on wooden items, on objects that maybe have been charged. When I mean charged, like let's say someone dies with the rosary on them or near them or in their hands or whatever, they may charge that rosary and a lot of their energy might actually dispel onto that item, something like that. So that was interesting. She told me, I think it was in the matriarch's room, that there was an apparition of a man that sat on the edge of the bed. I'm not sure if it was my room or if it was a different room, but anyway, there's an apparition of a man that sat on the edge of the bed, and he was beard. Looks like he had a beard or a goatee. Looks like he was visible enough to be seen, I think by the children of her, you know, her kids. The daughter was, okay, I've got my notes here. Daughter was age 7 to 10 when she would see the apparitions. Okay, so this is one that she used to see. And this apparition wasn't a friendly one. He was what was described to be similar to like a Charles Manson scary looking type. Now, I'm not sure if he was like a very mean apparition, but from the way it sounds to me like he wasn't very friendly. Let's see. There was an attorney, died in a car wreck, says that he died different way, had syphilis. Oh, okay, the story about this attorney was that they claimed that he died in a car wreck. But in reality, he had syphilis and he died that way and he went crazy and he was into embezzlement. Okay. House construction always stirred up activity. I think we all know about that one. Sometimes the apparitions get very comfortable in the setting that they're in or things of the time or the period. And then as soon as you start changing things, it brings them out of their comfort zone. They get angry, they get mad, they want things to be the way they were. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they leave. Sometimes they'll just hang around and just be mad. Okay. Let's see, another one. Oh, okay. She talks about this bowl that was moving down the table. And her husband, I think, saw this bowl move as well. And he was skeptical. Thought, you know how people say, oh, there's condensation underneath it. That's what moved the glass. That's what moved the bowl. Well, there wasn't any condensation under it, and it still moved, okay? All right, and then the other thing that we talked briefly about, I didn't get a lot of details, but I'm going to get more details when I see her again, provided she doesn't sell the house and move before I get a chance to talk to her again. These UFOs that were showing up across the road. So, and this is recent. You know, let's say last, I think she was saying last 5 years, because I can't remember how long they were in the house for. But, you know, that she was looking out the window one time and she saw this, craft-looking kind of thing. I cannot recall if she thought it was round or triangular. This is what I'm saying. It was at this point where I could have talked to this woman forever. And then you have your husband tapping his fingers, basically. You can feel them in your head. Tap, tap, tap. Let's go, let's go. So I think I told her we would have that discussion another time. But she, on more than one occasion, literally two plus, this craft would show up literally across the road and above this lake, stream, river, or whatever, I guess just hover there. And I'm not going to put words in her mouth at this time, but I believe that there was probably some blinking lights on it or whatever. But I want to talk to her more about that experience, because I want to ask her if she felt like there was any kind of a time lapse that she experienced from that point, or whether anything different changed around the area, or if this is when she noticed more activity in the house, or what type of activity. But anyway, that was the story of that. So I hope that kind of clears up my last episode. But the main elements about that last episode and this one is teleportation, the ability to teleport yourself even while living, even in a coma or maybe a brain dead coma like state, and be able to bring yourself back to a time when you were most happiest, and that was a little girl around the age of 5. And actually as a physical being playing with somebody. And by the way, this woman was in Boston. So you do the calculative math about how many miles away that was as this was occurring. She teleported herself from Boston all the way back to Minnesota. And if that's not a testament to something interesting, I don't know what is. So the question that would come up for me would be, are you sure that your little daughter didn't mistake this child in the picture for somebody else that might be residing? Like, for example, the 12-year-old next door that died in the fire, who might have, at her happiest age, gone back to that age about age 5 or 6 or something, or 7, like that. I mean, let's not forget 3 people passed away in a house fire. And again, if their souls and spirits are confused or not sure of, we know that the 3-year-old seemed to have found the house next door. Then why can't the 12-year-old find the house next door? Or the mother, who might be or become the distressed apparition that was hanging over this guy while he was barely waking up in his sleep and saw this mist. This mist could have represented fire. This face could have represented her distress of not being able to get out of the fire. So think about that for a moment regarding who some of these apparitions really are. Because sometimes they may not be who you think they are. My aunt, my great aunt, and my great grandfather, it's either my great grandfather or her doctor. So it's one of the two. I even researched her doctor. You know, I don't know how old she'd be to this day. 120, maybe? I mean, something like that. 120 years old? I don't know. I'd have to look up and do the math. But anyway, how did they know I was going to be there that day by myself on that property taking pictures? And how on earth could I have had such timing to shoot, photograph such a perfect picture in a window and have two of them staring right out at me? Now, keep in mind, I didn't see anything when I was there. It looked like a window to me. But now I know that sometimes, you know, how you get that feeling of, I don't feel like I'm alone and I feel a little creepy, maybe I should go now. I think that there was a point where I felt that because I wasn't on that property very often. And when I was, it just, you know, you get a little unnerved. It's like somebody's watching over the property or your nerves get the best of you, that kind of thing. But I guess somebody really was watching me that day. Anyway, I hope you found that part a little bit more interesting. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to talk about spontaneous human combustion. Stay tuned.
Hey there. I don't know if you've heard, but there's a great new radio show on Para X. Two hosts, 1 hour, and too much fun. Stephanie and Heidi not only talk about the latest goings-on in the supernatural worlds, they live it. They want to hear from you. They want to help you understand and guide you. And they want you to tune in. So, grab a friend or come alone to gather around that metaphysical table with Heidi and Stephanie. If you're interested in the worlds of the unseen, tune in to The Gathering Radio Show, Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on Para X Radio.
The main topic we are going to discuss this evening is called spontaneous human combustion. This will be the intriguing part of this podcast. To start off, let's get a definition in of what human combustion is generally referred to as. It is generally the self-heating within the body without an external source of ignition. It's usually an acceleration within the body to a very high temperature to the point of burning up and also a reaction within, very similar, known as kind of a chemical reaction within, very similar to what you hear of trees doing in a forest. It's also thought to be acetone buildup, which can also relate to alcoholism, diabetes, and other specific kinds of physical distress. Okay, well, that's a little unnerving, all right, because if it's that easy to self-combust, I mean, how much alcohol do you need to have in you? How bad does your diabetes need to be? And specifically, if it's a specific kind of distress within the body, what does that exactly look like? So what I did was I took a moment and I did a little research on this. And I found an article with 10 cases. So I'm going to go through these cases with you one by one. The first one that I'm going to mention, though, is going to be this gentleman who brought up his friend a few years back at the paranormal conference that I attended in Las Vegas when he said that his friend just recently passed away from self-combustion, and it was a mystery. I believe it was a mystery to him how that happened. And I think when the speaker was up there trying to gather information or seek out additional stories, and of course my stories are always, you know, ones where people's faces start to twist, you know. That one, though, I wanted to stand up and applaud and go, finally, somebody who can outdo me in a story, you know. He didn't necessarily go into details because that's not what the speaker was actually seeking, per se, and I didn't turn around to look to see who was talking. I wanted to really badly, but all I can tell you is that even within the last couple of years, this is something that still happens to people. All right, so this article, it's dated back in 2011, and let's see. And who's the source? Gizmodo? I've never heard of them. I don't know much about them. But this is what she, it looks like a she writes. Some people say that spontaneous human combustion is just a regular fire that people can't be bothered to find the cause for. That could have been avoided through basic fire safety. Okay, well, others say it's just a shift in our internal chemistry that can happen to anyone at any time. All right, so when I read up on the fact that you could have diabetes or just some kind of alcoholism, okay, that, you know, you wonder why you don't hear about that more often. All righty, so the latest case she writes about, this is the one that made headlines in September of 2011 with an Irish case where people found the burned body of an elderly man lying with his head near the furnace of his apartment, within his apartment. The coroners determined, though, that the furnace was not the cause of his self-combusting, okay? Nor was there any accelerant on the body or any evidence of foul play. They said this case was typical of spontaneous human combustion and that there were burn marks on the floor and ceiling directly below and above the body, but no other burn marks anywhere else in the room. Okay. Let's look at another one. Let's see. This one goes back to the late 1400s. You know, I'm just interested in how people have managed to keep notes all the way back to these years, and where do they keep them and safeguard them? And, you know, their writing was really scrolly back then, so how are they able to read this? So this one writes about an Italian knight in the late 1400s who liked to drink wine, have his women, and his song. And he consumed 2 ladles of a very strong wine one night, and for some reason it disagreed with him. And people say that he immediately vomited flame and then burst into flames entirely, and that no one else seemed to have any problem with the wine, and that people were baffled as to how this happened. And they say they're still baffled now. Well, keep in mind, this was back in the 1400s, so I don't know where his crowd is who's baffled, but they're still baffled to this day how somebody could drink wine, I guess, and then just burn up. Another one. Let's see. Claimed the life of at least one member of nobility, some noble countess who lived in the 1700s, was found halfway between her bed and her window one morning with everything except her lower legs and 3 fingers burned. She had apparently calmly risen from her bed to open the window in the middle of the night, but self-combusted before she could reach the window. In the room, 2 candles had remained burned, or at least the tallow had been burned. The wicks were left completely unburned. Soot covered the room, including some bread on a plate that she had left on a table. And just as an indication of how strange this was, when the bread was offered to a dog, or the family dog, the dog refused to eat it, making it the most obviously sensible player, they call it a player, in the room. Yeah, probably because he didn't like to have any dead soot body part on his bread. Okay? Butter, please. All right, here's another one. Disappearance, 2 of them. This person lived with her husband in France in the 1970s. Okay, now we're getting there. When her husband disappeared mysteriously, she contacted the authorities to try to find him. Couldn't find anything. A few days later, her son was out with some friends, and a neighbor found the body, except for her legs, reduced to ash in an otherwise undisturbed apartment. Okay, thank you. What about the other one? They only talked about one. They said there are 2 disappearances. Well, they only talked about one in that one. The fire inside, 1967. Okay. Passenger on a bus in England noticed some blue flames in the window of an apartment building. Thought it was a gas jet that might have, you know, caused place to go on fire. When they got to the place, they found the body of Robert Francis Bailey, a homeless man, and the firemen reported seeing a slit in the man's abdomen from which the blue flames were coming out of. Gross. Okay, here's another one. Let's see. When it won a court case? I gotta read about this one. Girl by the name of Nicole Millet, wife of a Parisian, 1725. Let's see. Found her husband roused the entire inn when he smelled smoke. What was left of her was in the kitchen, almost completely reduced to ash, with the wooden utensils around her unburned. Her other accounts have her burned on a straw pallet. Another one looked suspicious. They felt this all looked suspicious. So the husband was tried and found guilty of murder. And on appeal, he used the spontaneous human combustion defense and was exonerated. And it was Nicole's death was then ruled to be found from a visitation of God. Well, if that's the case, then I don't want God to come and visit until, you know. Oh, St. Petersburg, Florida. Landlady making her round. She noticed one doorknob was incredibly hot. The tenant, Mary Reeser, did not respond to her calls. So when they opened up the door, they found, a 6-foot scorched area of a carpet, a chair, and an end table in the middle of the scorch mark were upright, indicating that there was no activity. Nearby pile of newspapers untouched by the flames. The body was reduced to ash except for a skull and an undamaged foot. Some reports with just may be exaggerated, but they say the skull was shrunk down to the size of a teacup. Ooh, double gross. Let's see, when it lost a court case, Somebody in a manufacturing had severe burns. Some water heater episode. Felt like it was burned from the inside out, though, not from the outside in. Changed the story. Fell asleep. Woke up with terrible burns. Was the survivor of a spontaneous human combustion. Okay. Twilight Zone. I don't have anything on that one. And the final one. There is only one case in which there was a witness, a mentally disabled woman living with her father who cared for her. One day he saw a flash out of the corner of his eye, turned, and saw that she was on fire. Despite the flames, she continued to quietly sit in a chair, not reacting and not giving any indication she was in pain. The man's attempts to put the fire out left him with burns on his hands. The woman lived through the combustion but slipped into a coma and died shortly afterwards. This indicates one of the strangest parts of the human combustion. It takes a very hot flame to reduce a human body to ash. Crematoriums have special chambers designed for it. However, in almost all combustions, there are no burns in the room around the body, indicating that the person simply stayed in one place. Whatever the cause of it, though, it seems to knock people out first. And that's probably why she didn't react or move about or anything like that. Well, of course, then the question is asked of this. We're going back to reincarnation days where people have experiences or they, you know, could it be something as odd as the Holocaust moment? Though very strange, but a lot of these genetics do carry on down the line. If it has something to do with the chemical reaction, what exactly is in the genetic code or fiber of the person's being that could potentially lead them to having this kind of episode? Do not know. Well, I hope that this interested you enough tonight. I appreciated. I'm getting back on my feet from COVID. I'm feeling a lot better. It's been 3 months in. I'm seeing a lung specialist just to make sure that things aren't completely damaged inside of me, et cetera, et cetera. But I can tell you right now that I have been deemed a miracle case once again and have pulled through what was a very horrific and miserable experience that I hope none of you get. Stay tuned for more episodes of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. I appreciate very I appreciate, can't even speak anymore, I appreciate very much your listenership. Thank you for some of you who are now following me. I appreciate that too. And I hope I can bring you some interesting programs as we move forward into our future. Thank you so much, and good night.